From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Late last week, the Salt Lake Tribune reported highly placed sources told them that negotiations for Utah billionaire John Huntsman Sr. to purchase the Tribune had broken down. A key part of the story is that the LDS Church may have killed the deal. The paper described it as reticence. The Tribune operates under an agreement that gives the LDS Church veto power over potential owners. But why would Mormon leaders scuttle the deal if they did? Are they trying to kill off a competitor, silence a critic? And wouldn't Huntsman, a prominent Mormon himself, be the perfect owner from the church's perspective? As you can tell, there are a lot of questions in this story. The reporter and journalism professor Matthew LaPlante says you've got about 3 or 4 pieces of a 100-piece puzzle. So today in the program, we'll try and lay out what we know so far in this story. We invite you to join us after the news.
Hey, podcast listener. I'm Benjamin Bombard. I'm one of the producers of Radio West. If you like what you hear on the show, you can lend a hand by giving us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Facebook. And we'd also really appreciate it if you'd share what you think about the show, or if you have some thoughts about a particular episode, share that stuff around on whatever social media platforms you happen to use. Thanks a bunch and enjoy the show.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Well, it's no secret that the Salt Lake Tribune has had its share of financial struggles lately. Supporters of the paper say their fortunes weren't exactly helped by a deal in 2013 that changed the joint operating agreement between the Trib and the Deseret News. It's an arrangement that reportedly cut the Tribune's profits in half. Last year, the chief executive of the Deseret News, Clark Gilbert, told the New York Times he believed Salt Lake needed 2 newspapers and that they would not have agreed to the deal if they thought it would mean the Tribune would close down. But, of course, some people are skeptical of that. Late last week, the Salt Lake Tribune reported efforts of John Huntsman Sr. to buy the paper had fallen through, though the details are pretty sketchy at this point. One of the really critical questions is, did the LDS Church kill that deal? And why would they do it? Technically, they could do it under a new operating agreement, that agreement I mentioned. The Deseret News has to approve a buyer for the Tribune. Today in the program, we're trying to get as much clarity and perspective on this story as we can. Even though we asked the LDS Church to comment, they declined. We asked John Huntsman Sr. what happened. He couldn't or wouldn't comment. We had no response from Digital First Media, who owns the Salt Lake Tribune. Matthew LaPlante said he'd join us, though, and he's going to help us sort of work through what we know and what we don't today. Matthew LaPlante is a journalist, a blogger, an assistant professor of journalism at Utah State University. You should know he is former national security reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, and we've had him on as a guest host of Radio West from time to time. And he's joining us from public radio station KUSU in Logan. And Matthew LaPlante, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
Let's begin just getting this out of the way, a bit of disclosure. You have worked on a committee trying to arrange for a buyer for the Salt Lake Tribune. So you former reporters, I mentioned, you have your own interests in the story. We should maybe get that out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right around the time that the Tribune's new joint operating agreement was made public, the one that basically split the profits, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but yeah, in a way that was not favorable to the Salt Lake Tribune, a lot of people kind of started looking at opportunities to save the Tribune, really. And one of those opportunities that I was on a group of people that that was exploring this opportunity was a idea about community ownership, about putting together essentially a Kickstarter campaign, yeah, although a very big Kickstarter campaign that might be able to save the Tribune.
Now, I also want to get this out of the way, because we need to mention the difficulty in really discussing this story. As you put it, and I mentioned this earlier in my introduction, you said it's, you know, it's a big, huge 100-piece puzzle, and we have about 3 or 4 pieces of the puzzle. I mean, it's difficult to talk about in many ways, and a lot of this in some ways is conjecture.
Yeah, there's so much conjecture here, and it's really difficult. I think it's difficult for journalists. It's difficult for me to kind of even put myself in the position of trying to meet this out when we have so few details about what's going on behind all of these closed doors. But there's some pretty good circumstantial evidence around us, and there's some waypoints that we can lead off of, and certainly a lot of history. So I think there is information out there. Being able to say exactly what it means is difficult, but I think we can do our best.
Okay, let's break down some of the particulars first, some of the basics of this deal. And we should explain first who's in control of these talks, because it's fair to say the Tribune itself does not control its own destiny.
That's right. As long as you're not under the any misunderstanding that the Salt Lake Tribune is the same as the owner of the Salt Lake Tribune.
Right.
The institution, the very venerable, old, institution that has been in Utah for more than 100 years, the Salt Lake Tribune is not in negotiations for its future. The owner of the Salt Lake Tribune is a firm in New York City, a hedge fund,
right,
that really has very little to do with the day-to-day operation of the Tribune, but owns the Tribune, and that's largely who's in control of the Tribune's destiny, in addition to these other kind of moving part partners.
Yeah. And just as a refresher, let's explain briefly about this agreement that was signed in 2013. I mentioned some of it. Between the Tribune and – well, between Alden Global Capital, or Digital First Media, whichever, the owners of the Tribune and the Deseret News, this joint operating agreement. The Deseret News has pointed out it was the Tribune, by the way, and we should point this out, it was the Tribune ownership who initiated this process, that the owners of the Tribune were the ones who wanted to renegotiate the joint operating agreement, even though it's a pretty controversial agreement. But what is that agreement? Give us a sense of that, because this is sort of – we have to – I think understand this is some groundwork before we move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, in a nutshell, I think it's important to understand that back in 1970, Congress passed this thing called the Newspaper Preservation Act. And the idea was, at least on the surface, the idea was we could keep more newspapers in business if we exempted them from laws that prohibited competing businesses from collaborating, right? Like antitrust laws. And so basically what this allowed was for the Tribune and the Deseret News to be both partners and competitors at the same time, which under pretty much normal business circumstances would be illegal because it's anti-competitive. It's kind of arguable about whether or not this law actually worked. There were 30 of these joint operating agreements, almost 30, I think, of these joint operating agreements at one time, two newspapers in the same community, mm-hmm, competing but also sharing resources such as circulation and sales and delivery and, the guys who pull the change out of the newspaper boxes, right?
Yeah.
But today there's only five of these left, I think. I think it's down to five. And the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News are one of them. And so over the years, they are allowed to, under the terms of this law, they're allowed to kind of renegotiate the terms of their business relationship. And traditionally that's included things like how much of the profits from our joint business enterprise do you get and how much do I get?
Yeah.
And that's traditionally been related to circulation,
yep,
which kind of makes sense, right? Like,
sure.
We sell more newspapers. We sell 60% of the newspapers, so we get 60% of the profit.
You're talking about the Tribune.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And the most recent, before this rearrangement, the most recent joint operating agreement, I think, gave the Tribune 58% of the profits. And, there's caveats and this and that. But basically, it was a 60-40 deal, essentially. And what happened was that Alden Global Capital, which is a hedge fund, which bought the Salt Lake Tribune out of bankruptcy from a former newspaper owner, Dean Singleton, mm-hmm, and his group, who had basically just way over leveraged themselves. They just had too many properties, too much debt, and they declared bankruptcy. And so Alden comes in, swoops in, buys this distressed asset, the Salt Lake Tribune, and does what a hedge fund does, which is you start looking at what assets your assets have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, when you were looking at a business, we're looking at, okay, does it own a building? Well, no, the Tribune no longer owned a building because Dean Singleton sold the Tribune's downtown building, about a decade ago.
Right.
And it's now like a community college or a trade school college, I think, on Main Street in Salt Lake City. But it owned a share of a printing press, mm-hmm. and that was worth something. And one of the things that smart hedge fund guy identified was one of the assets that the Tribune owned was 58% of joint profits.
Yeah.
And somebody realized, again, doing what hedge funds do. I mean, which shouldn't have been necessarily surprising that somebody in a hedge fund said this is actually an asset. It's not just a profit sharing arrangement. Apparently approached the Deseret News and its ownership, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and said, hey, what would you pay us for the right to have more of the profits moving forward? It's not certain what the arrangement was, but I've heard estimates in between $15 and $20 million to basically take the Tribune's profit share and cut it in half, and basically take the Deseret News's profit share and make it 70%. So now there's a 70-30 arrangement in favor of the Deseret News.
And the Des jumps at that, of course. I mean, why wouldn't you, I suppose?
Why wouldn't you accept if you want to keep your competitor healthy because your competitor is also your business partner, there might be some questions about whether or not you should do something like that. But just on the surface, it seems like a pretty great deal for them. And it's a great deal for Alden. Alden gets to pull equity out of its asset. And basically now the Salt Lake Tribune has no more assets. There's really nothing left save the value of its brand, which we can get into.
We will. Because the question is who's going to buy this property now is a big one, and we'll come back to it.
Right, right.
Okay, so let's talk about the reaction so far. I don't want to say conspiracy theories. That seems to be kind of pejorative. But certainly lots of stories related to what is going on. And a big one is that – and we'll talk about this in more – sort of more particularly, but give us a broad sense of the reaction so far, because a lot of these stories are about the LDS Church trying to kill a competitor and a critic.
Right.
And a lot of this – the New York Times said, you get a sense in some ways some of the response has been excessive and wrongheaded. Before we get to the particulars, what do you make of the reaction so far to all of this and the theories that you're hearing and the rumors? Again, a lot of conjecture.
Yeah. I think it's totally to be expected.
Yeah.
I think the reaction is totally to be expected given the paucity of information that is out there right now, right? All of these things are happening behind closed doors. The deal to rearrange the JOA was completely secret. The deal that gave the Deseret News 70% of the profits was completely secret. It was only revealed because some whistleblower wrote this really kind of creepy hand-scrawled note that you can see online, on the Tribune's webpage or the newspaper, Utah Newspaper Project's webpage, that basically said, hey, journalists at the Salt Lake Tribune, you should know about this and you should write about this. And so it only came to light through this kind of like – it's almost like this deep throat Watergate kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
And so that itself just kind of lends itself to conspiracy theorizing. I don't think that the word conspiracy is too out there. I think there are a lot of people who believe there was a conspiracy. Now, whether or not there was a conspiracy, I can't tell you. But
yeah.
I think to a lot of the people who think that there was collusion behind closed doors, I don't think that they would blink at all at using the word conspiracy. I think that's exactly what they think happened. And there's been a lot of people who have tied this to a history of actions on the part of the Deseret News and its ownership, the church, the LDS Church, to undercut the Tribune, to meddle in the ownership of the Tribune, to do everything, and to try to take ownership of the Tribune. There's been well-documented attempts over the decades of the church trying to buy the Tribune at various times. And it was referred to in one memo that was drubbed up by the Utah Newspaper Project as the quest. That was the church's word for it, the quest to take over the Tribune. So a lot of people have connected these dots. But you know, in fairness, and I think most of them would say this too, they're working also with a lot of conjecture as well.
Let's talk about why we're speaking today, because the latest peg in the story came from this news reported by the Salt Lake Tribune that John Huntsman Sr. Had been in negotiations with the owners of the Salt Lake Tribune to buy the paper.
Right.
Tony Samarat of the Tribune reported, his sources had confirmed talks had been going on for months, but that they just stalled, that they had fallen through. And the question is, why did they fall through? Some sense in the Tribune story that reticence on the part of the paper wouldn't sign off on John Huntsman Sr.
That the Deseret News wouldn't sign off.
Sorry,
on,
forgive on me. That. Forgive
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. That's right. The yeah. Deseret News wouldn't sign off. Now let's talk about the Huntsman's involvement just a little bit before we get into the particulars. Why would John Huntsman Sr. be interested in buying the Salt Lake Tribune?
So that's a great question, because why would anybody be interested in buying a newspaper right now, right?
Yeah.
You know, Huntsman has expressed interest. Reportedly, John Huntsman Sr. has expressed interest over a long period of time of maybe becoming a newspaper owner at one point. This is not unusual for, you know, rich guys in America.
Billionaire industrialists want papers.
Right?
Yeah.
Going back to Hearst, you know, like Orson Welles' Citizen Kane, right? I think it would be fun to own a newspaper.
Yeah.
So it's like one of my favorite quotes,
yeah.
right? And I do. I think so, too. Like, if I had $1 billion lying around, I think it would be fun to own a newspaper. So to some extent, it's, you know, it's a very powerful voice in the community. It is a voice that we should say has been critical of John Huntsman Sr. in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and this, I mean, I honestly, like, I think the Tribune deserves an award for bravery on this. In the midst of Huntsman trying to buy the paper, well documented that he was trying to buy the paper, the Tribune went ahead with publishing a book about the relationship between the Huntsman family and the Romney family. The book was called Mormon Rivals, and it was not well taken by the Huntsman family. It really wasn't. And the Tribune knew that that might hurt its chances of being bought by Huntsman Sr. and gave reporters Matt Canaman and Thomas Burr, you know, full authority to press forward anyway, and they did. And Huntsman was not happy, although there's no indication whatsoever that that was a factor, although there's, I suppose, no indication that it wasn't also.
But, right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get to the critical question when we get back from a break. Matthew LaPlante is with us, an assistant professor of journalism at Utah State University. He's joining us from the campus of USU, the radio station KUSU there in Logan. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the Salt Lake Tribune. They've been struggling lately financially. And over the weekend, the paper reported efforts of John Huntsman Sr. to buy the Tribune had fallen through. And one of the important questions that we're talking about today is, did the LDS Church kill that deal, and why would they do that? Matthew LaPlante is an assistant professor of journalism at Utah State University, former reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us from public station KUSU in Logan. Let's take a call from Matthew in Salt Lake City. Matthew, welcome.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Doug. Hey, first of all, I want to commend KUER, just the job that you've done following the story with the Tribune. Quick little background, and I'll get off the air. I'm actually related to Paul Raleigh, who's he's my stepfather. My mother's Dawn Howe. She's a longtime editor and 30-year reporter. Neither one of these individuals talk about this or have an opinion about it, but being their son, I see a lot on the inner workings of the Tribune. And these opinions are mine and mine alone and nobody else's. And I'm sure Paul would wring my neck if he knew I was saying this, because Paul has no opinion. be that said, here's an opinion. Like, when you guys first started covering this story, you know, you had this Tribune editor on, there was all this nonsense about how the Tribune was going broke, and people on the inside of the Tribune knew it was a smokescreen, and they knew darn good and well what was going on, and the Tribune was silently being strangled to death in the bed. And it's been really nice to watch you guys try to follow the story. I'll give you my personal opinion about what's going on for what it's worth. Since nobody else can speculate, I'll speculate for you. There's a real simple reason why this is going on. And it's because for a long time, the Mormon Church does not like having an independent voice within the community that's willing to investigate skeletons within the closet. Look at stories like the Mark Hoffman bombing. You know, when the Mormon Church is going out, buying up sensitive historical documents and locking them up in a vault under Temple Square.
That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
Well, but it's those are the types of stories that the Tribune does that nobody else will do.
Right.
And if the Salt Lake Tribune wasn't there, it never would have gotten covered because nobody else outside of Utah cares.
Okay, I think all right. So let's take that, Matthew LaPlante. I want to hear you on that because that is a big question. Is, as Matthew put it, is the LDS Church trying to, you know, strangle the baby in the bed, trying to kill this deal because it doesn't like the criticism it's gotten. It doesn't like the scrutiny. It wants certain stories to be left alone. What do you make of that?
The Mormon Church is an international organization. Journalism is international in scope. I don't put it past at all certain people in the church whose leadership structure, the average age is like, you know, like 107, I think. I mean, these are like really – it's not 107. But these are like some really old guys with some really long memories. So I don't put it past individual members of the church's leadership structure to say, gosh, the world would be a better place if there was no Salt Lake Tribune in it. That said, what would it do? What would it do to shut down one paper, one independent voice for an international church, right? Mm-hmm. It would invite people – to look more skeptically at the church. And the church is very PR conscious these days. They've made some big, big missteps in recent years. They could make no bigger a misstep right now than looking like they were involved in shutting down an independent voice that is sometimes, but not always, quite frankly, and a lot of people would say not often enough, critical of the church, of the what is inarguably the most powerful institution in the state of Utah. You know, the Tribune could probably do a lot more to be critical of the church that it is not doing. Right now, it's a pretty friendly voice, and shutting down, you know, a voice that is at least fair to you, if not, you know, on your team, at least fair to you, you know, is probably not a really good idea because the Tribune right now does occupy a space in the collective consciousness that says, well, yeah, they do try to hold the church accountable. You get rid of that and it's open season on the church. So I don't think it would be a good PR move on their part. And I think that they're conscientious of that. So, yeah, could there be people who would really like to see the Tribune shut down? Certainly. Is that the overriding mission of the church right now? I don't think so. I really don't.
Let's take another call. Man, Matthew, thanks very much. Brian is joining us in Dublin, Ireland. Brian?
Yeah.
Welcome.
I'm a former Tribune employee, so I'll declare that interest.
Matthew, hey, Brian, how are you?
Hey, how are you? It's Brian McIntyre here. I was on the copy desk for 9 years and best paper I ever worked on, including papers here in Ireland. So, in fact, I visited you, Doug, in the studio a few years back. My question is, when I heard that apparently the church is videoing Huntsman as an owner, it just struck me that I think my sense from afar and from having lived there for so long is that I don't think they want to go toe-to-toe with him over any arguments about any coverage if he was an owner, because he's so well-respected globally as well as in Utah and the States. I just wonder what Matthew thinks about that.
Yeah, it's such a big question. Why wouldn't John Huntsman be the ideal candidate if the LDS Church is able to have veto power on all of this? I mean, he's an active, engaged Latter-day Saint, prominent. Why wouldn't they want him to own the paper?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And as an aside, I'll say Brian was one of the best copy editors I ever worked with in my career at the Tribune. Great guy. And he asked a good question. And, you know, the reporting from the Tribune right now, it suggests that this deal broke down. This deal with Huntsman broke down. I think the word they used was reticence, right? It was reticence by, mm-hmm. by the church.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, invited speculation that what the church did was it exercised its veto power, which it has under the terms of the joint operating agreement, not just this recent one, but going back to 1982, I think, the church has been allowed to, if the Tribune was sold, approve of the owner or disapprove of the owner.
Right.
Which and a lot of people have looked at that and said that alone is so anti-competitive, it's totally at odds with the letter and the spirit of the law. But that's been around, that's been a provision in the JOA since 1982.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people said, oh, look, they did that. They did that with Huntsman. But the problem, as Brian points out, is that Huntsman's a very prominent Mormon. And no, he's not always lockstep with the church in every way, but by every account, this guy is a very good and very faithful Mormon. And so I think the most likely scenario for what happened isn't that the church exercised its veto power. It may have had reticence. It may have had reticence to the dollars and cents of the deal. And I think we have to acknowledge that, like, Huntsman is a businessman. And if you look at this, even in his charitable giving,
you're saying Huntsman may have had reticence. Like,
well,
this,
I think
this doesn't add up.
I think that what you have, I mean, look, Huntsman may have said, hey, look, the paper's all, you know, like, I'm willing to give you this much money for the profit point, and the Deseret News and the church might have said, no, you have to give us this much money, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I guess under that scenario, the church is the one that was exhibiting reticence, but you know, Huntsman's a savvy guy, right? And he's very conservative with the way he spends his money. If you ask anybody at Huntsman, Huntsman Chemical Company, you know, like, this guy knows how to pinch the pennies and do it well. If you ask anybody in his charities, like, does Huntsman just throw money around? He doesn't. He's very thoughtful about how he spends it and how he invests it.
So you're saying John Huntsman Sr. wouldn't say, I'm going to, just on a charitable basis, to save the interest of two particular voices in a community, two newspapers, because of the potential for corruption, because of the importance of scrutiny, he's not just going to do that on a charitable basis. If he can't figure a way around the numbers, he's not interested.
Yeah, I'm not behind these closed doors, right?
Right. Yeah.
But I take Huntsman at his word, and his word was that he wanted to go in, and he didn't want to buy the paper to make $1 billion out of it. He already has $1 billion, several of them, as a matter of fact. You know, he wanted to buy the paper to save the paper, but you know, like, how far are you willing to go to buy the paper to save the paper? Are you willing to engage in a bad business deal? Are you willing to be the guy who has to come in and, after buying the paper, have to lay off a bunch of employees because the deal isn't in your favor? The profit points don't add up, right?
Mm.
So to the extent that he was trying to buy this as a business and try to make it work so that it would at least meet the bottom line and not keep falling into the red, I could very much understand if he had reticence toward it, and if he said to the church, well, here's what needs to happen. If the church said, no, that's not going to happen, all of a sudden you got a deal that can't be made.
Hmm.
There's just no way to kind of, like, squeeze any more value out of the Tribune. You could pretty much only buy it as a charitable endeavor. But there's a lot of charity to go around, and Huntsman's given more than $1 billion to charity over the years.
Yeah,
I think more than that. It's not like this guy doesn't have any experience trying to save things, including human lives, right? What everybody says about him, though, is that he's a conscious and conscientious businessman, even in his charity.
Yeah. Brian, thanks. Glad you called. Here is an email from Pat Bagley. You probably know the name, the cartoonist, gifted political cartoonist for the Salt Lake Tribune. He writes, it should be made clear the Tribune was in the black and making money until our Wall Street hedge fund owners sold our interests and assets to the Deseret News for a pile of money. And he puts the number at $25 million. I know the numbers are all over the place. Pat continues, the Tribune was and continues to be the JOA's cash cow, and the secret deal made 2 years, 2 years ago allows the news to pick our pockets. You want to respond to the particulars of that, that it is in fact – and this raises another question about why the Deseret News would kill this deal if, in fact, that is the cash cow. If the paper is making the money, why would they not be interested in keeping the paper alive?
Right, precisely. And I mean, I can't comment on the specifics. Right, $25 million, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
The notion that the Salt Lake Tribune was making money and was still profitable, I've also heard that. We have some – again, you got to look at like windows of opportunity for information. There was a great window of opportunity for information about the Tribune's finances going up to like 2000 – I don't know, 6 or 7, maybe 8. The Tribune was owned by a publicly traded company, and so a lot of its books were kind of open for public scrutiny, or at least more than they are today. Now that it's in you know, the hands of a private equity firm, and I've heard several publishers and several editors in chief of the Salt Lake Tribune say, to their knowledge, the Salt Lake Tribune has always been profitable. One thing somebody told me was, we've had bad quarters, but we've never had a bad year. So I think on balance, I think what Pat says is right. I think the Tribune has been profitable for a long time. It's not leaking money the way that a lot of newspapers were, but you know, like it's a tough and rough time for newspapers.
Yeah,
right,
but now you're at 70-30.
Oh yeah.
That how long can you last? That question has come up obviously a lot.
Well, you can't. The Tribune, I mean, by almost all accounts, the Tribune's leaking money right now.
Right.
Under the 70-30 thing. And the funny thing about that is that, you know, like what it requires to understand that the Salt Lake Tribune is pulling in 30% of the joint profits is to first consider, like, is the Salt Lake Tribune making more money than it is spending? Because in a classic business model, that's how you decide whether or not you're profitable. Mm-hmm. Are you making more money than you're spending? You're profitable. You can keep being in business. But that's not the equation that matters right now. What matters right now is how much of the money that you're jointly making with another group, and I don't know how much that group is making or losing, do you get? And so it's really – it's a difficult thing I think for a lot of people to wrap their minds around. The Tribune, you know, is not – making 30% of the profits. The Tribune's probably making 50% of the profits. Maybe it's making 60% of the profits. Maybe it's only making 40% of the profits, but it's not making 30.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Tim is with us. Tim is joining us from West Valley. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. I just had a theory I wanted to run past you, and it's a theory I've had all along through this scenario. And that is that the Salt Lake Tribune goes broke, and the church comes in as its savior very publicly and turns it into a very thin little daily that reports fairly objectively on world news. And then when it has to report on itself on church matters and controversies that involve the church, it's a mouthpiece for the church.
Well, they already have a mouthpiece, don't they, Matthew LaPlante? Would you talk to that theory? And I think some are going to be surprised by your contention that the church is, or rather the Salt Lake Tribune is friendly to the LDS Church these days.
The Salt Lake Tribune is fair to the LDS Church, and fairness to, in my mind, like I'm a journalist, right? So in my mind, if I'm being fair to you, that is friendly, right? That's my version of friendly. I think the Salt Lake Tribune is very fair to the church. I think the Salt Lake Tribune covers the church like it covers any other powerful institution, and I think it gives us a lot of latitude and works really hard to get the church's side of the story on every story. So I know that that doesn't necessarily go with the brand identity that it has and has had for a very long time, which is that it's, you know, holding fire under the feet of the church. I don't see a scenario where the church keeps the Tribune open as a mouthpiece. As you said, Doug, the church already has a mouthpiece. It has many mouthpieces. It runs a virtual media empire. And doesn't need one more newspaper to sing its praises. That is not to say that it would not keep the Salt Lake Tribune open as a very thin daily that covers, you know, local events, you know, does kind of the reporting work of the community, but, you know, hiring decisions might be made that says, you know, like, we're not going to prioritize church news because we've got all this other stuff to cover church news.
Yeah.
I don't think there would be an order that said, like, shut up, don't cover church news. But I think, you know, like, that can be handled in hiring decisions over time. So I think, you know, the scenario is certainly plausible. I don't think it's part of a vast conspiracy to get to that point. We could get to that point, but I don't think that's where the church is going. I'm not sure the church knows where it's going, quite frankly.
I want to get to the question of what the roles of these various papers, because you've talked about the fact that Salt Lake, the Utah area, is different from other two-paper communities. And I want to get to that point, but let's take another call. This is Joan O'Brien joining us on the phone. And we should just point out Joan heads the group Citizens for Two Voices. Her late father used to be the publisher of the Salt Lake Tribune, Jerry O'Brien. Joan, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for addressing this complicated situation. I just wanted to point out that, you know, you guys are sort of forced to speculate a lot, but, you know, the joint operating agreement itself can answer a lot of questions. I mean, it's there in black and white. Nobody needs to guess what's in it.
Right.
And so, I would just like to say, go over to UtahNewspaperProject.org and read it, you know, and you can see the profit split, you can see the veto power, you can see the fact that the Deseret News has control of the joint business that the two papers built over six decades. You can see the section called Reserved Matters that showed, you know, sort of how they envisioned how the Tribune's near future would play out, you know, reduced circulation, reduced numbers of days, et cetera.
But Joan, can I just step in there? Because I think it's a question worth raising. Yes, they foresaw reduced circulation in terms of the print operation, but weren't they banking on the fact that then the digital operation would kick in and that, you know, print was old school, that they were looking at digital operations?
Well, that's a good storyline to tell, but that isn't what this deal was about. The two newspapers had already reached a deal addressing their online operations. That's their 2011 internet agreement. So, you know, this really isn't about online operations or moving to a new digital future. It's just about shifting the profit points and the power of the company to the Deseret News. And I also want to address a point about the veto power. The Section 10 veto power has not been there since 1982. It was added. It was slipped into the JOA in 2001 in the midst of that nasty fight between the Deseret News and the family that had owned the Tribune for 100 years. So nobody really knew about it until this 2013 JOA,
right,
and
right.
It's very much at issue because the paper is obviously in play.
Joan, while I have you, let me ask you, why would anyone buy the Tribune?
Well, they can't. There's nothing to buy right now.
Yeah.
A change in ownership provides an opportunity for the new owner to negotiate a new joint operating agreement. And so we were disappointed when the Huntsman deal seemed to fall through because a purchase of the paper would provide an opportunity to rewrite the JOA and everyone could go home.
Yeah.
And all of this be resolved. So, and, you know, there are plenty of people who would buy the Tribune. It's not, you know, its problem has never been that nobody wants to own it. It's kind of been the opposite. Everyone wants to own it. There's really, with this JOA, with a 70-30 split, you know, with control of the paper, you know, of the joint business by the Deseret News, with the veto power, all those things. It's just not a property that's that marketable.
Quickly, because we need to get to a break. Is the lawsuit going to kick back in?
Yes, we placed our discovery efforts on hold to allow for the transactional guys to get this deal done.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's fallen through, we'll be back in court.
Okay, Joan O'Brien, glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Matthew LaPlante, I'll give you a chance to respond if you want to after we get back from a break. Matthew LaPlante joining us, journalist, blogger, assistant professor of journalism at Utah State University. We'll take another break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the fortunes of the Salt Lake Tribune in light of the latest news, which came late last week. The Salt Lake Tribune itself reporting that negotiations for the billionaire industrialist in Utah and Mormon John Huntsman Sr. to buy the paper had fallen through. So what does that mean? Matthew LaPlante is helping us work through the story, an assistant professor of journalism at Utah State University. Let's talk about, Matthew, the roles of the various papers, because you've talked about how Salt Lake, and or Utah anyway, is different from other two-paper communities. And you say the national media doesn't really see the difference, even though we do. What's the difference?
You know, I think the difference is that the classic idea of why there's a benefit to having two papers in the town is competition.
Yeah.
Right? Competition drives journalists to do better work, to get scoops, to write the story better than the other person does. There's certainly merit to that. I've worked in one newspaper town, I've worked in two newspaper towns, and I definitely prefer to wake up each morning a little bit terrified that my competitor has beaten me. So that's the benefit of having a two newspaper town in any city in America where there's still a two newspaper town, and it's not much. Mm-hmm. The difference in Salt Lake City really reflects the value of multiple voices and multiple perspectives in a city that is very diverse, if not ethnically, although increasingly ethnically, yeah, religiously. In Salt Lake City, what two newspapers offers is two very distinct editorial voices and often two very different ways of approaching the same news story. And a great
different cultural voices? Is that?
Yeah, different cultural voices. Absolutely. You're talking to two different audiences, really. I mean, the Deseret News audience is different than the Tribune's audience. That's really well reflected. Actually, this morning I hop online. I look at the Salt Lake Tribune's lead story about Jackie Biskupski becoming Utah's first gay mayor.
Right.
This is red letter day, right?
Yeah.
You go to the Deseret News, they have the same lead story, but their story doesn't mention the fact that Jackie is gay.
At all?
Until it's buried in a quote, and then at the very end it mentions, that she's gay.
Right.
But it doesn't even make the point that she's the first gay mayor of a city in Utah, let alone the capital city. There's an argument to be made that that was, an appropriate journalistic framing, right? Like somebody decided, well, it's really not that important.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, it doesn't matter that she's gay. She won the election. And it wasn't a big issue in the election. So that's fair. But it was very fundamentally different framing. And I think that's the thing that happens in Salt Lake much differently than happens in other two newspaper towns. If you looked at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and the Seattle Times,
mm-hmm,
they were mirrors of each other.
Right.
If you looked at the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News, they were mirrors of each other. And so when the Post-Intelligencer collapsed and when the Rocky Mountain News collapsed, it was sad. Don't get me wrong. There was a really great journalist who lost their jobs, and there were fewer journalists doing work in the city. But these institutions had largely framed stories the same way. They had, by and large, very similar editorial voices, and they were creating a product that was quite similar. And the product that exists between the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News really now more than ever is a very, very different product.
In 2010, the Deseret News, of course, changed its editorial focus, and it describes that focus as rigorous journalism for family and faith-oriented audiences. Basically, they're shifting their focus to Mormon readers. And it was in some ways a shift away from more conventional state and local coverage. It carved out this niche. And so I'm wondering what you think has that meant for – and because we both know really remarkable reporters at the Deseret News.
Absolutely.
So what has that meant for the way they cover stories, the way they perform their watchdog function, the way those stories are edited and conveyed in the paper, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really important to note, as you just did, that the the Deseret News has some really good journalists working for it who are still focused on local issues. I'm a big fan of the work of Sarah Israelson and Lisa Riley Roach and Morgan Jacobson, who's one of their newer reporters and happens to be a former student of mine who I'm super proud of, because he's killing it over there. Like, they're still doing good journalistic work. But the entirety of their framing is moving away from local news and moving toward national news, but specifically national news that is framed within this idea of, you know, family-oriented news, you know, kind of as they define family, not as...
Well, that just means a Mormon audience, right?
Right. Yeah. A Mormon audience. And I think they've kind of tried to be maybe a little bit more all-encompassing. So they're talking to a, you know, a traditionally conservative Christian audience, not just a Mormon audience, you know, but the kind of the larger Christian community on the conservative kind of family values side of things. But, you know, like... I think you could argue this is a good business plan, right? This is a really smart businessman. The D News has looked for ways to expand its readership all around the nation, all around the world. I think the concern on my part, the concern is that when we think about this in terms of the paper's legal relationships, the D News's legal relationship to the Tribune, it's really important to remember that the newspapers weren't given special absolution from antitrust laws in order to protect their ability to opine on issues in the nation and in the world. They were given absolution from antitrust laws so that they could cover local news at the same time while collaborating as business partners. So they could compete and collaborate at the same time. So as the D News has moved increasingly away from that local role, not to say that they've absolved themselves of it altogether, but their focus has certainly shifted. I think it really begs the question whether or not they're still even qualified to be in a, you know, competitive slash cooperative relationship with another entity, because they're not doing the same work anymore. It's a very different product.
Yeah. Let me read an email from Rick, who writes, "Explain to me why it wouldn't be a good idea to simply abandon the Salt Lake Tribune and start a new newspaper not bound by this agreement with the D News, using all of the same people and all of the same resources, and compete again on a level playing field. Call it the Utah Tribune, whatever." What do you think about that question? I think that's kind of – people have thought about that. I mean, this has occurred to a lot of people, I'm guessing.
It has, and people have explored the idea. It's really challenging to start a media organization right now. It's not challenging at all to start a small media organization. Doug, if you and I wanted to start our own newspaper, we could do that so by the end of this show. We only got like 6 minutes left. But if we wanted to launch a news organization with the size, the status, the institutional memory, the reporting talent, the editorial skills, you know, the computers and the phones of the Salt Lake Tribune, of all the, you know, let alone the brand, which says something about who they are, that's not easy. So I do appreciate this listener's idea. I appreciate that might be an option that happens in the future. It might have to be. And I think that if the Tribune disappeared tomorrow, that's exactly what would happen. There is brand space there that needs to be filled and that would be filled, I think, by some smart business person who looked at that and saw an opportunity. But I, you know, like, I think people have been fighting so hard to save the Tribune because there is value there. There is all of those things that I just mentioned. There's some really amazing reporters who are doing some really great work. And look, you close the Tribune tomorrow, and I know for a fact there's a bunch of really great investigative projects that are in the works right now that you're not going to get to read.
You happen to know that, do you?
Well, I have a lot of friends.
Here's a question from a listener, Stephen, who is calling in. Stephen, forgive me, but I'm going to try to get to the essence of your question. I'll just ask it myself. And essentially it is, what is the state of this Department of Justice investigation? You know, this idea that this is anti-competitive, the JOA agreement. What do we know about that right now?
We don't know a lot about that. We know that the Department of Justice has done some work to look into it. They've asked some questions. I don't think the DOJ is necessarily eager to get involved in this. What we have here is a situation where we have a federal law that only applies to five entities left in the United States. Well, 10 entities and five business arrangements. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of case law on this. I think the letter of the law is pretty clear. I think the spirit of the law is pretty clear. But there's just not – there hasn't been that many test cases. And the one test case that really exists, which is a case from West Virginia where the DOJ got involved, you know, to kind of mete out some JOA business that didn't seem to be really kosher over there. The long-term result of that was that the papers folded into one another and you ended up with a one newspaper town. You know, the status of the DOJ investigation, I don't think is as far along as the civil suit that has been filed by Joan O'Brien's group, the Utah Newspaper Project.
Stephen, thanks for that question. Let me ask you finally, less than a minute here, so we don't have much time. Tribune sources have said the talks with Huntsman have stopped for the moment, but aren't necessarily dead. I know it's conjecture at this point. Any idea what could happen? Is that still a possibility?
I think it is. I think you shouldn't count Huntsman out. I would like my two cents. I would love for Mr. Huntsman to reconsider endowing the Salt Lake Tribune. I think it's cleaner. He can certainly afford it. You know, you don't have to worry any longer about whether or not you're meeting the red. You frankly don't have to worry about a 70-30 profit split. I certainly hope that he is still considering being the owner of the Tribune, and I think we would all very gratefully rename the paper the Huntsman Tribune.
Matthew LaPlante, journalist, blogger, teaches at Utah State University, joined us today from public radio station KUSU in Logan. Matt, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Doug.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.